Thank you. So there will be kind of two parts that we'll see today. The focus through both parts will be on Amuta Anan and Amuta Esh, the pillar of cloud, the pillar of smoke, fire. But just two elements within that. The first was just who exactly could see it, and then an interesting kind of linguistic connection to other parts of the Torah that we'll see. So the first part, just who exactly could see Amuta Anan v'Amuta Esh. When I was just going through the beginning of the parsha, that struck me. So I hadn't really thought of it before. I just assumed everyone could see, which might be the truth. It seems like the most straightforward way of looking at it. But when you look at the psukim in the first source there, it describes how Paro sends out Klal Yisrael, and Hashem does not take us the normal way that one would have thought to go. And then in so let's just look at Yitzayin. Vayibeshalach Paro es ha'am v'lo nacham Elokim derech eretz plishtim ki krovu. The fear was that everyone will become afraid and they'll just return to Mitzrayim. So he takes them in a slightly unusual manner. And then for the rest of the Pesukim here, it doesn't necessarily describe anything that would hint to us whether or not Paro, for example, could see Amud Ha'anan or Amud Esh. And we'll see in a few minutes, some Pesukim later on might help with that. But just in Chaf Aleph and Chaf Beis, Vashem Holech Lifnehem Yomam Ba'amud Anan Lanchosam Haderach V'Layla Ba'amud Eish La'ir Lehem Leches Yomam V'Layla. So we have Amud Anan, Amud Eish, that were guiding the nation, one during the day, one during the night. Lo Yamish Amud Anan Yomam V'Amud Eish Laila Lifne'am. And one of them, at the very least, was always present. So when I initially asked that question in my mind, could the Egyptians, especially Paro, see the pillar of smoke and pillar of fire? My initial thought was just, sure, why not? They seem to be open miracles, openly visible by everyone. But why would he care? He's already rejected everything else at this point, and he's kind of well beyond that point of no return in terms of hardening his heart. So what difference does it make? If he sees it, it's not going to change his mind. But then, just looking in the Mefarshim, there might be some different approaches. In 2 and 3, we'll see that Rashi and Ramban are actually talking at a slightly later point in the narrative, where we're actually at the very least, very close to Yom Suf. And it describes, again, Amud Ha'anan v'Amud Ha'esh, and how there was Vayi Anan v'Choshech l'Mitzrayim. The Pesukim there seemed to have a split, that on one hand there was clouds and darkness for the Egyptians, and there was light, Amud Ha'esh es ha'layla, Vayayir Amud Ha'esh es ha'layla l'Yisrael. And the Amud Ha'esh was there at night to provide light for the Jews, but not for the Mitzrayim. V'holech lifnehem kadarchu l'leches kol ha'layla. Yeah, Amud Ha'esh was going before the Jews. V'achoshech shel arfel l'tzad Mitzrayim. But the Egyptians were completely encapsulated in that darkness. They couldn't see what was going on before them. They just knew they were chasing the Jews, but they didn't know what was about to be before them, i.e. the sea splitting. Which I saw some explaining here, that Rashi is kind of coming to explain, if the Egyptians see that the sea is splitting, why are they so eager to run into it? It seems to be that maybe, according to Rashi, they didn't really see the sea splitting. They just knew they were chasing after the Jews, and next thing you know, they're in a trap. Which could be. If you assume something like this is also happening earlier in the Parsha, maybe that's an explanation that Paro really didn't see. There was just darkness. But he didn't see a pillar of flames, which seemingly would have been something that would signal to him that something big is going on. and maybe not to chase after the Jews. For now, okay, so the Ramban is a slight difference with Rashi, but the same basic point. Vashav Lever, here he's saying, these psukim here later by the Kriyas Yamsuf, Vashav Lever, ki va amut ha'anan hazeh, bein machane Mitzrayim, bein machane Yisrael. This amut ha'anan, the psukim there seem to describe that it actually moved. Meaning to say that maybe in, this is from Perek Yud Dalet, maybe what happens in Perek Yud Dalet is actually a little different from our psukim in Yud Gimel, and that it shifted position specifically to conceal what was going on from the Egyptians. But earlier on, that was not the case. Lomar shelo hifsik amud ha'anan bein amud ha'esh l'machne Yisrael. That at this point, the amud ha'anan was never blocking the Jews from sight of the pillar of fire. Aval hifsik bein machne Mitzrayim bein amud ha'esh. But it was blocking the Egyptians from seeing amud ha'esh. Ve'anan v'choshach bein machne l'machne. And so, right, there was cloud and darkness between the two camps, separating them. And even though the Amud Ha'esh was actually behind the Jewish people, however, since it was also above them, and that was kind of illuminating down onto them, and there was no pillar of cloud blocking any of that light, they were able to see. So he just has a slight difference as to exactly how the light was being was illuminating the way for Klal Yisrael. But also seems to emphasize that something shifted, that wasn't the answer for above. That seemingly Paro really could just very easily have seen the pillar of fire and the pillar of smoke. Fine, so that wouldn't be an answer then. In 4, the Sforno says, V'hashem holech lifneihem, ma'az shehayu besuchos, shehu chutz l'gvul Mitzrayim, v'nichnasu l'midbar. The Sforno seems to say that it wasn't right then as they were leaving Egypt itself, but once they were just outside of Egypt, did they have the experience of Amud Ha'anan v'Amud Ha'esh, and so as they begin their exit from Egypt, this guidance wasn't there, and therefore Paro would not have seen it, and it wouldn't have hinted to him anything. Just very quickly in 5, before just mentioned one last thing from the Pesukim about this part of this year. The Ksava Kabbalah says something very interesting that I didn't see anybody else see, and I'm not 100% sure where he got it from. We'll just see. He adopts the approach of the Ramban for what was going on with Amud Ha'esh or Amud Hanan, but in this little piece he says something very interesting. The people at the beginning of the camp, the beginning of the kind of the line of people leaving Egypt, they were the ones that actually needed the guidance. And those that were following them in line would just follow them wherever they went. So this guidance provided by Amud Ha'anan, Amud Ha'esh, was only necessarily really for those at the beginning of the line. And with that in mind, shehalach lifnehem betzeisam imitraim lohaya elashato ad hayam, and this pillar of cloud that was before them when they left Mitzrayim was only necessary until they reached the sea. V'gam lohaya le'enei kol Yisrael rak lifnei anaviim shebehem, and not only that, but it was only necessary. It was only seen by the Nevi'im within Klal Yisrael. So only a select group of Jews themselves saw it. So certainly Paro would not have seen it. Which is very interesting. It's not necessarily at all what I would have assumed just reading Pesukim, that I would have assumed that everyone saw it. Ach mitfilas Moshe achar cheda egel hispalo v'nefilinu ani v'amecha. Habris Neged Kol Amecha, I say Niflaus. However, from the time that Moshe prays after Chet Egel, and kind of the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is renewed, Ma'az v'la'la haya anan la'eni kol beis Yisrael. However, from that point, after Chet Egel and the relationship is restored, the clouds of glory, as it were restored, and everyone could see it at that point. Ki anan Hashem la'eni kol beis Yisrael b'chol ma'aseihem. Which is interesting. Again, if only a few people from Klal Yisrael could see it, then ostensibly would not have seen it. But then, as I was thinking about it more, at the beginning of Perek Yud Dalet, Hashem speaks to Moshe and says, "You're going to speak to Klal Yisrael, and Yashuva v'yachanu lifnei piachirus. You're going to go and camp out before piachirus. Bein migdol v'nayam lifnei baal tefon nechko." Techanu al yam, and they're going to camp out by the yam. And vi'amar paro, livnei Yisrael, nevuchim hem ba'arth, sagar aleihem amidbar. And paro will say that they're lost. They don't know where they're going. And then Hashem will harden paro's heart, etc. And it says that after that, vayugad lemelech mitzrayim, kivarach ha'am. So Hashem tells Moshe that Paro will say that you are lost in the Midbar. And then after that, somebody, the scouts, whoever it was, told Paro that the Jewish people had fled. Which makes it sound like, first of all, that he just wasn't paying any attention at all. Apparently he didn't know that anybody had left, which seems a little strange. But also that the idea that Paro thinks we're lost in the Midbar is all part of Hashem's plan. And that it's connected with the hardening of his heart. So it's very likely that the pillar of clouds, and the pillar of fire could have been visible to Paro, but it didn't matter because Hashem had already hardened his heart at that point, and it would not have influenced his actions. So that was just the first part of a question that I had that I was trying to answer. I don't know if it's completely answered, but that's a potential approach. The next part, starting with source 6, is based off of an idea from Rabbi Jonathan Zirin. I don't know if anybody knows him. He is the Sgan Rosh Kolo right now in the YU Kolo in Toronto. And my wife and I, and our son was born in Toronto, but we lived in Toronto for 2 years, and we were in that Kolo. So this is, every week we've put out like a parchment sheet type thing. It's more than one page. I just printed the first page. And he has a very interesting, this is from Parshas Beshalach, obviously, but from 2016. He has a very interesting connection between a number of pesukim where he focuses on the word lo yamush, which we see in source 1 in Pasuk Chaf Beis, Lo Yamish Amud Ha'anan Yomam V'Amud Ha'esh Laila Lifnei A'am. And that idea, that word, Yamish or Yamush, pops up in a number of other places in its significance. His starting point is in source 6, the Yerushalmi. And the Yerushalmi asks this question, actually, in a number of places. Ma Kashira Ha'isba Mishkan. So in this case that I brought, it's asking about Kashir, but it also asks about Binyan. What tying was there in the Mishkan? Or what Binyan, what building was there in the Mishkan that we learn out for the Malacha of Kashira on Shabbos? Shayu Kosher Misamiser. They would tie down the hangings, but the Yiriyos that would kind of were around the entire Mishkan were tied down to pegs which were stuck into the ground. And so the Gemara has a problem with that. Below Lashah Haisa, wasn't this temporary? The whole point is for the Mishkan was that it was movable, it was temporary. They would set up camp, build the Mishkan, and then when it was time to go, they would pack it all up. Amar Rabbi Yasa, Mekevan Shayachon Venosim Al Pi Adibor Kemishahu La'olam. So the first answer is Rabbi Yasa says, since everything, when they would camp and when they would travel, was completely concordance with Hashem's command, every time they were told to camp, it's as if that was permanent. That was their mindset. And what Rabbi Zering himself says is what this seems to mean is that building is considered temporary only when one's mindset dwells on transience. However, the Jews did not view the encampments as temporary. Even when traveling, they experienced permanence. Wherever they were, no matter for how long or short, they were just doing as God said. They were guided by the will of the Eternal One. So for all they cared, whatever God told them to be, they could, wherever God told them to be, they could be forever. And the Gemara goes on to kind of argue against this. We'll leave that aside for now. The diagram there, if you read on in the Yerushalmi, it kind of describes what actually they learned tying out from. And it describes that if a string would break, they would retie it. But if it would break in two different places, they would not tie it twice. They would just untie the whole thing and put in a new string. And that's where we learn the tying from, when they put in the new string. Presumably just because that would be unseemly to have so many knots on a string. And there's a general principle that you want, obviously, the Mishkan to be as nice as possible, and that we don't cut corners and skimp, as it were. And a makom says, ain anius but makom ashiris. There's no poverty, quote-unquote, in a place of tremendous wealth, be it spiritual wealth or otherwise, that, again, we don't skimp when it comes to Mishkan. But focusing on what Rabbi Zering points out with lo yamush or lo yamish, that was clearly the case by Amud HaAnan and Amud HaEsh with Kol Yisrael going through the Midbar, and that lended itself a sense of permanence, and that was our mindset as a result. And he connects that to entering into Eretz Yisrael in Source 7, where Yoshua is told by Hashem, Lo yamush sefer ha-Torah hazeh mepicha ve'gisa bo yamam v'layla l'man tishmor lasos k'chol ha-kasu bo ki az tesliach es darchecha, excuse me, v'az taskil. So again, that same idea, lo yamush, but instead of Amud HaAnan v'Amud HaEsh, here it's the Sefer Torah. It's almost as if Amud HaEsh and Amud HaAnan were a kind of preparation. They were obviously a much more striking presence than seeing the Sefer Torah, but it prepares us for that life. And now, once we have the Torah, it already starts to take the place of Amud HaAnan v'Amud HaEsh. But all the more so once we're in Eretz Yisrael and we clearly don't have Amud HaAnan v'Amud HaEsh anymore, it's upon us to really have the Sefer Torah as that guidance. Right. And just to quote him again before we go in, he says, and as in the case of the cloud and fire, our adherence to that path gives our lives permanence. So again, lo yamush means it should never leave. Lo yamush sefer haTorah zeh mepicha. It should never leave your mouth. You should always be clinging to the Torah, just as and to its guidance, just as you had that constant guidance from the pillar of cloud and pillar of fire. Whether we are going through good or difficult periods in our lives, through a period of constant change and uncertainty or periods of stability, if we are committed to God and His Torah, God's presence, guidance, ensure that there is always some constancy in our lives. Whatever we are going through, we can point to our relationship with the Eternal One as the omnipresent being. Meaning that the Sefer Torah is there, it's always there for us to turn to. It seems like it's really on us to have that lo yamush, that it should never leave, and that's part of our goal, obviously. And I think it's interesting that Yoshua specifically is the one where that comes up, that it, really emphasizing that Sefer Torah, the Torah itself, now is replacing the Amud HaAnan v'Amud HaEsh, because if you look in Source 8, there's another place where Amud HaAnan shows up with the Oel Moed. V'hayag kavo Moshe ha'ola, v'yered Amud HaAnan v'Amud Pesach ha'ohel v'diber em Moshe. When Hashem would speak with Moshe, and there was Amud HaAnan, v'ra achol ha'am es Amud HaAnan, omed Pesach ha'ohel, v'kam kol ha'am v'shtachavu ish Pesach ha'olo. And here it clearly says everyone saw Amud HaAnan, at least the one that was on Pesach ha'ohel. And everyone bow, v'dibar Hashem el Moshe panim el panim, and Hashem would speak with Moshe face to face, kasher yidaber ish el re'ehu, v'shava el mechanev, Hamachane, Mishar So Yoshua bin Nun Nar Lo Yamish Metocha Ohel. And this is the great praise of Yoshua bin Nun in terms of why was he chosen over others to be the replacement for Moshe upon Moshe's death and be the new leader of Klal Yisrael, because he was Lo Yamish Metocha Ohel. And it's really striking that that's the exact same word here, that Yoshua himself is told that Lo Yamush Sefer HaTorah Zeh Mepicha, and Hashem clearly knows that he will succeed in that because he had already demonstrated his ability to cling to the Torah like that, and that that is clearly an important part of leadership of the Jewish people. This pops up in other places as well, this idea of Lo Yamush or Lo Yamish. For example, in Yeshayahu, the very last two psukim here begin the Kedusha that we say at various different points in Tefillah. We'll go through the beginning psukim just in English for the sake of time. And truth is absent in that he departs from evil, makes himself ridiculous. And the Lord saw it, and it displeased him, for there was no judgment. And he saw that there was no man. He was astonished that there was no intercessor. Therefore his arm brought salvation to him, and his righteousness it sustained him. For he put on righteousness as a breastplate, and a helmet of salvation upon his head, and he put on the garments of vengeance for clothing, and was clad with zeal as a cloak. Obviously, very vivid language. And according to their deeds, so will he repay fury to his adversaries, recompense to his enemies. To the islands he will repay recompense. So shall they fear the name of the Lord from the west, and his glory from the rising sun, when affliction comes like a flood, which the wind of the Lord drives forth. Obviously, a focus there very much on justice there, which is a common theme. And then in Pasuk Chaf, Uval Tzion Goel Lashave Feshav Yaakov Nuam Hashem. But a redeemer, the Goel, shall come to Tzion, and to those that turn away from sin within Klal Yisrael, Nuam Hashem. It says Hashem, Va'ani Zos Bristi Osam Amar Hashem Ruchi Asher Alecha Odvar Asher Samti Beficha Lo Yamushu Mepicha O Mepi Zaracha O Mepi Zera Zaracha Amar Hashem Eatav Odolam. So here it's less of an imperative as it is in Sefer Yeshua. Here it seems more of a havtach, it's a promise that it's never going to leave you. That relationship that we have with the Torah, the fact that we have a connection with the Torah, won't break down. And that is Zos Bristi Osam Amar Hashem Ruchi Sher Lecha, etc. But really, Lo Yamushu Mepicha, and that it's also transgenerational. It's not just us, it's not just Yeshua, but it's those that follow us. And again, it has the potential to be just as kind of vivid in our lives as Amud HaAnanda, Amud HaEsh, because that's what it historically kind of took the place of, that Amud HaEsh, Amud HaAnanda was setting the stage for receiving the Torah and having the Torah be within that category of Lo Yamush. So I think that's very important for us to think about in our own lives. Each of us as individuals will play out differently, but what would that be like to see the pillar of cloud and the pillar of smoke within that idea of Lo Yamush, that it's just always present? And now that we don't have that, and the Torah is in that category, how does that play out in my life? And I think that can have very the results of kind of having that thought and just exploring that within our minds can be very powerful. And just finally to close here, this yet another connection that I was thinking about as I was kind of putting together the source sheet. The psukim in source 10 don't bring up Lo Yamush or Lo Yamish. However, it does talk about Beficha, which in other places had been connected. That does seem to be, actually not another, in both the places that we saw, both in Yeshayahu and in Sefer Yoshua, where it says, Lo Yamush Sefer HaTorah Zeh Mepicha. And so in Source 10, Vigadata Levincha Bayom HaHole Mor Ba'avor Zeh Hashem Li B'Tzeisim Mitzrayim. Obviously, the mitzvah of Sipor Yetzias Mitzrayim on Pesach night. And here the mitzvah of tefillin is described as being Laman tiyei Toras Hashem beficha, that Toras Hashem should be beficha, should be there, present. Obviously, putting on tefillin doesn't necessarily literally make Torah in your mouth, but the idea that there should be that clear presence in your life. And the Netziv and others quote this Michelta, which says, So there's this clear connection and almost equation between tefillin and Torah, which I thought just reinforced that idea of lo yamish sefer Torah zeh mipicha, that of that constant presence, when even though there are other mitzvos which seem to say Torah Hashem beficha, the goal is the same as having Torah in our life. Which the Netziv notes there, that it doesn't mean that you, if you're learning Torah, that you just never have to put on tefillin. But the kind of the ideological idea behind the mitzvah seems to be the same, that it's to have that presence within our lives. And so, again, just to conclude with, as the Yerushalmi said, that there was this essence of permanence, that whenever Hashem told us to camp, we may as well have assumed that that was forever, and that that was our mindset. And that, in turn, is also how we looked at the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire, that that guidance was there, and whatever it told us to do was all that was in our minds, provided that level of guidance. And then the Torah, once we don't have the Amud HaAnan v'Amud Eish, once we have Har Sinai, I mean, obviously it continues on after that, but once we are given the Torah, it already starts to take precedence. It now is that guidance. And again, as I mentioned earlier, I've already kind of been thinking about just myself, but perhaps that's what others can do as well, that thinking about what that could mean for us as individuals, that yes, we don't see Amud HaAnan v'Amud Eish, but what would it be if I were to look at the Torah as that guidance? You know, first of all, do I? And if I don't, why not? And should I? And how could that, or would that change my life if I did? So just some things to think about for this parsha. I hope everyone has a good day and good jobs. Thank you.